Welcome to Journals of a Healer, Unleash Your Hidden Genius. Today, there's no hiding the genius of our guest. Some people, their genius is kind of a little bit hidden or submerged. This lady's genius is all over the place. I'm so happy to bring as my guest Victoria Feldman. Hello, Victoria.
Hello, Mary, and thank you so much for that beautiful entree into your show.
Well, you know, you have so many tremendous, amazing accomplishments that I'm having a hard time figuring out where to start. Why don't we just begin with, what did you really start out with when you were a young girl dreaming of what you might do with your life? What was it like?
Well, it's interesting that you would ask me that because my latest blog is on the could-haves, might-haves, should-haves, and would-haves that are available to us if we are given the proper upbringing. And I didn't have an early happy childhood. So it was very difficult for me. And when I was a little girl, my creativity was always the center of my universe. I always knew that I was supposed to be a creative source. And yet my family had very different ideas about what I should have been, could have been, would have been, and might have been. So that's what my blog actually was about this week, and how I feel that as we get older and clearer about what our true purpose is and what it is we truly want in life, that we do remember the past. A lot of people say, well, we don't live in the past, so we have to forget about the past. I don't believe that. I believe that we must remember the past in order not to repeat it. So, or to grow from it. And I know that in my past, I had dreams of becoming an actor, a singer, a dancer, a writer. But I didn't have the support of my family, so I never believed. I never believed and I never developed the belief systems that I had enough talent to do any of those things. And so instead, in order to gain their approval, I basically followed their dreams for me rather than my own.
Oh, isn't that terrible? We start out pleasing our parents, and then we please our friends, and then we please our teachers, and then we please our boyfriends, and then we please our bosses. And when do we get a chance to please ourselves?
I think that when we start to seriously do spiritual work is when we start to realize that. And I don't think it can happen any other way. I don't think all of a sudden you have this epiphany and you go, oh, now I'm going to just please myself. I believe that you have to do spiritual work. You have to put the time and the effort into really looking at different. And there's so many different things you can do that will resonate with you. For me, the law of attraction and A Course in Miracles resonated with me. So I have been a student in the course for over 25 years, and I have been a student of the law of attraction probably for about the same amount of time, although I didn't get serious about the law of attraction until I began coaching other people and realized that they weren't getting what they wanted because they weren't truly in alignment with what it was they wanted. It's not enough just to believe or to think what you want. I want to make that very clear. Belief is something that comes from not only thinking what it is you want, but aligning that with your your whole solar plexus, your whole inner man, has to be in alignment with what it is you truly want. And so often,
yes, well, you know, knowing is so totally different than belief, because belief, you always have to prove it.
Absolutely. And that's why when I wrote this blog and I started thinking about all of the accomplishments that I have had throughout my life and how they did not resonate with me on a level that a lot of people's accomplishments do resonate with them, and they become great writers, and they become Oscar-winning actors, and they become Grammy-nominated singers and whatever. It's because there's something in them where the whole being knows what it is they truly want. And so I keep thinking I'm going to get there. And, you know, when you're in your 60s and you keep thinking you're going to get there, you better get there quickly, because it's the last chapter of your life. And so that is why I write so much about what I've done, not to go on an ego trip with myself, but to take a look at it. And in fact, I just gave a wonderful workshop, a Law of Attraction real estate workshop in Carmel, California. And I stood there and realized that I had sold hundreds of millions of dollars worth of real estate over the years. And here were these people paying money to sit and listen to me and to have me guide them. And I had to admit to them that I did not realize what that really meant, to sell hundreds of millions of dollars of real estate, because that is something remarkable. And it mm-hmm. is something that I should be proud of. And it's something that I should be able to say, well, yes, I can do this. But every time I would sell a house, I would think that, well, this is just a fluke, or this is the last time I'm going to do this. Or there was never the feeling of, oh, yeah, I can do this. Oh, yeah, absolutely. I'll do this again next month. And it's very interesting how some people have that doubt in them, that self-doubt, that other people who don't have it, they just keep on going. And I have to really fight to keep on going. And that's why I think it's important that the people who come to me, that they understand that they're not alone, that all of this self-doubt and all of this self-loathing and all of this lack of belief in themselves, I get it. I understand it. And you're not alone. People are not alone that feel this way.
You know, if something just occurred to me as you were talking, every time you sell, you sell homes, you don't sell businesses, right? No, not commercial property. Every time you sell a home, you open a new chapter in people's lives.
Of course.
And I just wonder if that isn't basically more important to you than actually the sale.
It is so important to me because it is the single largest purchase, usually, uness you're a multimillionaire, it's the single largest purchase that you will ever make in your life. And it is your home. It's where your dreams will be made. It's where your memories will be made. It's where everything about you is in those walls, and how important that home is. And yes, it is so important to me that I'm able to be an instrument to help people get something that everybody wants. Everybody wants that sense of belonging. Everybody wants that sense of stability and security. And your home can give you that. And so it is very important to me. In fact, I usually help people buy things for less than they can afford because I want it to be such a joyous experience. I don't want them every 3 days to be going, oh, my God, how am I going to pay this mortgage? I want them to go every 30 days, wow, this is so wonderful. This is so much less than the rent I was paying, and it's my home. And that's what I want for people.
That's fantastic. And I'm just wondering, how did you segue from the real estate business into your serious writing?
Well, I've always been an artist at heart. I started out as an artist, and mm-hmm. I have been writing since I was a child. My great-grandfather was a Hebrew poet, and I would go visit uh-huh. him when I was a tiny, tiny child, 3-4 years old, and I remember he had an old Hebrew-keyed typewriter, and he would be typing.
Oh, my.
And I would sit there, and I would say, "Oh, Grandpa, what are you doing?" And he would say, "I'm writing letters to God." And he would give me a piece of paper and a pencil or a piece of paper and a crayon or whatever, and he said, "You write letters to God." And so this started very early in my life where I believed, now that was one person in my life, that he gave me that belief that I could actually talk to God. I could write to God. I could talk to
mm-hmm.
God. I talked to angels. He would tell me that there were 4 angels that went to sleep with me every night. One was at the head of my bed, the foot of my bed, and on either side of my bed, and they were there to protect me. So I got that from him when I was very, very, very young. And oddly enough, my father, who was his grandson, also got that from him. So my father and I were very, very, very much alike when it came to writing and knowing we could write. But writing
that's
has
beautiful.
Not been a source of income for me, Mary. So that's always been a difficult and painful truth that I've had to face. I've had to make my money to support my writing, selling real
mm-hmm.
estate. That's really where I've made the money to do what it is I truly, truly love to do, which is to write and to coach and to help other people achieve what
mm-hmm.
they want, what they truly want. That really gives me more pleasure than anything.
I hear you. So, but your writing really is your gift to the world.
I believe that. I believe that. And yet, you know, in the law of attraction, if one would say if you're truly doing what you are supposed to be doing, which is your true purpose, then the universe will support you in doing that. And so there is a bit of a
dichotomy.
Challenge there, even now for me, even
yeah.
though I do believe in the
mm-hmm.
law of attraction, there is still a bit of, I don't have that profound sense of freedom that you would have if you were a bestseller.
Uh-huh. Well, perhaps that's on the way. I mean, you have overcome and you've accomplished so much. I mean, when I think of you, struggling with an eating disorder, this is to me is totally amazing. Just look at you now. How could you ever have had that problem? You conquered it so perfectly.
I'm a work in progress, and I believe that we all are addicted to something. I believe we're all obsessed when it comes to something, and so I think that to find this perfect person. I did a
mm-hmm.
workshop with Wayne Dyer in Hawaii a couple of years ago on divine love, and he talks
mm-hmm.
all about all of his own challenges. And I think that everybody that we see, that we perceive as being these, they're having these perfect lives, they will talk to you when they're talking to you honestly about failure. They've had tremendous failures. It's their resilience that keeps
mm-hmm.
them going further and further and higher. They rise above it. And so that's the
mm-hmm.
main thing about an eating disorder, alcoholism, prescription drugs, recreational drugs, sex, shopping, it could be anything. It's about rising above it, and you do it when you can. And sometimes you can. Mm-hmm. Sometimes you go, oh, no, I need to comfort myself, and so I want that chocolate. So it's never something that completely goes away. And again, if you are, even if you do it in small steps, it will be like an ongoing therapy session for you. It's about having control, self-control. So eating disorders, this is a big one for this country. It's in the hundreds of millions of dollars that we spend on weight loss products, on diets that don't work, on surgeries that don't work. It's unbelievable how much money is spent on trying to get thin or trying to even be just a normal weight. We do have a serious, serious overweight and obesity problem in this country.
Oh, yeah. You know, I'm in a different generation than you. And when I was going to grade school, there was one fat kid in every class. One. Look at it now. It's totally unbelievable how it's mushroomed, how it's multiplied, and I don't know whether it's the me generation or the fix me generation or what it is that is the culprit here. But what do we do about this?
Well, I don't think it's the me generation. I think that it's the fear that people have today that they can't mask anymore. They are so frightened, and they should be. Every day, if you read the news, that in itself can scare you half to death because it's so bad. I mean, these terrible things that people are doing to each other, it's just mind-boggling to me that we can read it, we can watch it, people being beheaded, people being burned alive. I mean, we act like, well, this is way over there. It can't touch us here. It's way over there.
Oh, no.
But you follow the Law of Attraction's principles or A Course in Miracles principles, you realize we're not separate from each other. So we are over there. We are the ones doing this, and we are the ones where it's being done to us. We are not separate, and until
we're tolerating it, or we're ignoring it, we're doing what? You know?
And we're doing all of those things.
Yeah.
Really, it's just terrible. And I don't think we're going to, we're not going to heal until we take a look at it and we really realize that our weighty thoughts, which is what I talk about in my new book, Hello Beautiful, it's really more about the weighty thoughts that are the root cause of the obesity epidemic, but it's also the root cause of what we're going through as human beings today. These are these thoughts that we have in our head and how we have to examine them because it derails us from organically gravitating towards a world of peace.
Yes, and I noticed that you have been in, you were the founder of the Creative Expressions, a higher consciousness program for children. Do you think that by programs like this we sort of work our way into a solution of what we've been just talking about?
We have to start with the children. It has to start there because it had to start with us. And unfortunately, I know it didn't start with me, and I think there's probably millions, if not billions, of people where it didn't start with them. And
right.
So what we do to the children, and when we don't listen to them, when we don't pay attention to what it is that they're saying and feeling and thinking, and we are basically in charge of their belief systems. Our parents were in mm-hmm. charge of our belief systems. That's a huge thing to be in control of, another human being's belief systems. So mm-hmm. we had it, and now the children today have it. And so none of this is an external fix. It's always internal. And so we have to look at our own failed attempts, and we have to look at our triumphs, and we have to say, this is what works. And that's why I wrote the book the way I wrote the book. Hello Beautiful has exercises in the back of each chapter to help people to overcome their feeling of loss, hopelessness, defeat, failure. Mm-hmm. It's all mm-hmm. meant to turn this all around. My goal is to always turn things upside down. When I started Creative Expressions, it was a need in the community in Malibu, California. There were so many latchkey children. That was an epidemic. It was every other household. Children were coming home by themselves after school because their parents were. And so I wanted them to have a place where they could, instead of going to an empty home, they came to us, and they were given, we had everything. We had yoga classes. We had Tai Chi classes. We had organic gardening. We had arts and crafts. We had creative writing. Anything you can think of that would build a child's self-esteem and honor their creativity, we had. We allowed them to express themselves, which I was not allowed to do as a child. I think I came from that generation, children should be seen and not heard.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Well, I was quite lucky because I grew up kind of all by myself. And my mother was so busy doing all the things that had to get done that I had a lot of alone time. So I was allowed to do anything I wanted to in that alone time. So I wonder if, you know, children today hardly have any alone time.
They're too busy today. My niece, every time I talk to her, she's frazzled. Her children are frazzled because the competition today is unbelievable. It's off the charts. We want our children to be, well, you know, they have a program on television now, something Child Genius or something like that. And the children are literally pushed. I know she told me that my great niece, because she's my niece, my great niece, is up until midnight doing her homework. She's only 11 years old, and she's up until midnight. And then she wakes up at 5 o'clock in the morning so that she can be tested to see if she has retained that information for the next day. And in between schoolwork, there's soccer, and there's dance lessons, and there's this lesson, and there's that lesson, and it's unbelievable. I don't know that these children get more than 6 hours of sleep a night, and it's just unbelievable to me that people are doing this to their kids and not paying attention to what it is they truly want. Just paying attention to what we want. I have two children. I have a son who is an academic. He went to Harvard. He graduated from Harvard. He's always been an academic. My daughter, who is just as bright as her brother, is an artist. Mm-hmm. And she did not want to do the academics in school. So I said, well, you have to go to school. You have to do something. So instead, she to I had her go to beauty college. They had a cosmetology course that rather than go to high school, you could go to this cosmetology course. She became the youngest, most successful cosmetologist in Beverly Hills. She worked on Rodeo Drive. She was up in all the magazines. She did all the celebrities' hair. And now she's designing jewelry, and she has her own jewelry line. So you have to listen to your children. Not every child is going to want to or resonate with academics. They're going to resonate more with a trade or a creative outlet, and they can be just successful. I know that in Germany, and in Canada, they consider their trade programs every bit as important, and in Japan, every bit as important as children who go and become doctors and lawyers and go to universities.
And in England, there's a tremendous focus on theater performance and all of that, and that's to me is amazing, and it's amazing to me that the little country of Ireland spends more money on the arts than we do here in the United States. This is a shock to me.
That's wonderful. Yeah. That's wonderful. And then we wonder why we have 2 billion people worldwide that are classified as overweight or obese. We realize that what I wrote this book for was not for me to overcome my own eating disorder. It was to take a look at statistics and to make this a public policy cry for help. And I was very, very fortunate because a couple of months ago, my son was invited to be part of this very small group of young, I guess, geniuses in the academic world, whatever, to be part of a welcoming committee for Hillary Clinton in San Francisco.
Wow.
And so he said, Mom, I want you to come and I want give her your book, and this needs to be a public policy issue. And so he was really the catalyst for that. And I did go and I met her, and she was absolutely wonderful.
I'm sure
she's a professional at being wonderful, but I have to tell you, there's a lot of professionals at being wonderful that do not have the charisma that Hillary Clinton. She looked right at me. She was so interested in what I had to say. She took my book. She wrote me a lovely note after she got the book. And and she was she's a beautiful woman, but she also has some extra weight on her as well. And so this is very common now. In fact, when I went to the event, I said to my son, do you notice how many, like you said, Mary, that there was one fat child in your classroom when you were growing up? I said to my son, have you noticed how many seriously overweight women there are in this room? Because this was a women's event mainly. And he
Victoria, can I interrupt for a second? Because we have a caller that would like to ask a question. I'm going to see if she's still
Mary.
Mary.
Mary is Paula. Mary is Paula.
Yeah.
No, she just wants to listen. She just wants to listen.
Oh, okay. Oh, well,
okay.
Good enough. I just wanted to double check because I got a yellow balloon there saying somebody wanted to talk, so I wanted to make sure. So anyway, I'm sorry I interrupted you, but this. Sometimes we do have people that really want to ask questions, and a lot of the things that you brought up are so valuable and so important. But can I just kind of change pace for just a minute and kind of pull you back to your first serious book, which address
not
something
goodbye,
totally different. Yes. Yes. And here you are, first of all, addressing the mysteries of the afterlife, and then getting into conquering our weaknesses here in this one. Can we talk about this?
Absolutely. When I was 35, my mother died at 35. When I was 35, I couldn't get out of bed. I became very, very, very ill. And I was a mother with two small children. And I thought, oh, my God, my children are going to be without a mother, just like I was without a mother. And something happened to me. I don't know what it was, but something happened to me. And a friend of mine said, you need to go see Elizabeth Kubler-Ross. She was the most eminent person I think we've ever had on this planet that really took on death and dying like she did and made such incredible contributions to that subject. Mm-hmm. And so I wrote her. And she wrote me back, and she said, I want you to come and spend 5 days with me in a monastery. And I went, and there was no radio, no television, no telephones. It was about 75 of us. One-third of us were dying. One-third of us were parents of children who were dying, and the other third were people like me that felt like we were dying. With no medical causes and no illnesses, but we felt like we were dying.
Really?
So she had read the children. This is not goodbye, it's hello, was written not just by me. It was written by a group of children at the Montessori school in Malibu. These children were only 4 to 6 years old, and they wanted to know where we went after we died. And so we came up with this little book. And so I had given that to her, and she said to me, this is not just for children. This is for the child within us all. And that's why you were given this project. And this is something that you're meant to do, but it's not just for children. This is not a children's book. This is a book that parents can read to their children. This is a book that dying children would benefit from, and this is a book that the child within us all would benefit from. And so she became really a friend, a mentor. She endorsed the book. The book won an award for the best first book. And that book, oddly enough, was published by myself, and I never even sent it to a publisher. I just published it, and it sold 5,000 copies, and I really never renewed it or published it again. And so many, many years later, when I wrote Hello Beautiful, I started to realize, wow, that's my second book. And so it's another teaching book. And I feel like everything that comes through me is channeled through me, and that I'm meant to just teach something that's happening in the world that people are struggling to overcome. So the first one was overcoming your fear of death and dying, and the second one was overcoming this self-loathing and this self-doubt and this fear that causes us to become addicted to substances, people, things, whatever. So
I'm wondering if we can say it's overcoming your fear of living.
It's overcoming your fear of living, Mary. That's very good. It's overcoming your fear of living. And also knowing what it is you truly, truly want. When I went to coaching school in Marin, California, that was the question they kept posing to us over and over and over again. What is it that you truly want? And then, as I told you the other day, I did a little bit of Byron Katie's work called The Work, and she always says, is this true? That's her work. So I would now what I do in all of my coaching sessions is I ask people what it is they truly want, and then I ask them, is this true? Now, it sounds like this is something you can get to in one session. I can tell you it is not. Something that takes a good 6 months to even kind of get to it, and it usually takes people a couple of years of work and study and daily work, daily journaling, daily meditation, learning to say no and mean it. That's a big one for me, is learning to say no and mean it.
Mm-hmm. Yes, because we are giving people, we are people-pleasing people. And if you can't please people, how are you going to get their attention? And there we go. We need to set boundaries, you know.
Well, and this is why you look at some of the most successful people today, they have to completely ignore that because they're not going to please everybody because so many people are jealous of them. So they have to deal with people that are, you know, that resent them, that are bitter, that are jealous. Mm-hmm. These are all very low emotions, jealousy, bitterness, resentment, anger. You know, then we have a world full of narcissists, people who only think about themselves. And if anything you say or do, there's a cute little show I watch, although it's becoming a very psychologically telling show called Dance Moms. I don't know how many, I don't know if you've ever watched it or have, certainly how many of your listeners have, but it's about a woman who is extremely overweight, and she really is talented, and she's created these incredible, successful children who they are incredible. I mean, they dance. I can't take my eyes off of them. They're so fabulous. And yet she is such a mess, and she's a narcissist, and every time somebody says something to her, she erupts. And that is the true – I have a client like that as well. If you say something to her, she doesn't hear what you're saying. She somehow – it's wired in her head that she's hearing something else, and she becomes very defensive, and she starts – carrying on, and the next thing you know is she's talking about something that it wasn't even close to what we were talking about in the session. Mm-hmm. So you have to be careful when you're talking to people like this, because you probably aren't going to be able to fix them.
No, of course not.
That's important for all of us to understand.
In some way, you can steer them a little bit in a different direction somehow.
You can somehow steer them in a little different direction, maybe. But the bottom line is that if people are, if they have a schism, and that schism, and I don't even know, narcissism to me, I'm not sure that that's developed. I'm not sure that's not something chemical that people are born with, because I've never seen, in my work, I've never seen someone who truly is narcissistic heal completely from that. I have one client who will actually say, "Ooh, my narcissism is acting up, isn't it?" Now, that's huge for a narcissist to be able to do that.
Oh, yeah.
That is not a little thing.
Do you think it's possibly an overreaction to low self-esteem?
Well, it's fear.
Overcompensation?
The very crux of all of this is fear. So narcissists are terrified. They're so scared, and they're scared of being found out. And interestingly enough, there's not a lot about them that's that compelling or that – it's not something that you – in other words, they have an overly I can't think of the word, but they have that kind of overly view of themselves that nobody else has anyway. So they're trying to hold on to something. It's a superiority. Like I have a friend who I love her dearly. I love her so much. She is a fabulous psychologist who works on her subject is empathy. And she is fantastic with other people. She's brilliant. She is a genius. Yet she has a superiority complex. And it doesn't matter where we are, where we go, what we do, who we meet, she is superior to them. And that is a problem. Now, that's a little bit different than narcissism because she doesn't overreact. If you say something to her, she doesn't even become defensive. She just sits and listens, and then afterwards she'll say to me, well, and then she'll go into why that person's not all there. But she doesn't do what a narcissist does, which is completely overreact, and they can be dangerous.
Yeah. I hear you. That's an interesting distinction you have made there, and I hear the quality that you put into all of the articles and that exist in magazines and newspapers and in your educational courses is that analytical quality that is so remarkable for someone who is really as metaphysical as you are.
My father was a psychologist, and again, I had a great grandfather who was a poet and a writer, and so I did come from some of that. I kind of have been around my whole life, but I am very, very interested and curious. I'm always curious about why people do what they do, say what they say. I'm always so curious about that. So I think that for me, the metaphysical is just one part. It's one component of a person's whole being. But we are, as Maria Montessori, who when she developed the Montessori method, she said unless we are educating all four quadrants of a human being, we're not going to have a whole human being. Unless we educate the psychological, the spiritual, the intellectual, and the physical, we're not going to create a whole person. So you're going to be off balance. And I think that's one of the things that happens to all of us is if we're not, and that's when we go back to being a child again. If you don't have parents who are addressing all four quadrants and how important all four quadrants are to becoming a whole person, you'll have a person that is off in one way or another. So it could be physical, and those people might develop an eating disorder and end up fat, or it can be spiritual, and those people end up not knowing God and not knowing that they were created by a higher power. And so that's a problem because then they can't pray. They don't have anybody to pray to. So
they're out there on the edge of the limb. That's right. Or the edge of the cliff and no place to go.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly. So then you've got the ones that parents tell their little girls, well, you're just going to grow up and get married and have children. There's no reason to spend all this money on a college education for you, which is what happened to me. My brothers went to college. My parents spent money on my brothers, but they felt that I would just, that would be a waste of money. And the interesting thing about my parents, which I've thought about recently, is that they spent a lot of money when I was a child on singing lessons, dancing lessons, acting lessons, modeling lessons, charm school, all of those things. And yet when it came time for me to say, gee, I think I want to be an actress or a singer. I want to, you know, be a creative person. Oh no, that wasn't even an option. So we all have these stories. That's all we are anyway, Mary. We're just a bunch of stories.
Sure. Of course. Yes, and then, you know, I was just thinking about the pigeonholes that people put us in when you're talking about educating the whole person and nourishing the whole person. These snap judgments that people make. Oh, you're no good at this. Or you can't do that because there are too many people out there that are really good at it, and you're just, you know, you'll never make it. So
when I listened to Barbara Streisand, and my father said, "Now, do you really think you can sing like that?" And I said, "No." And he said, "Okay, then." That's your answer. And I actually didn't think I could sound like that, and boy, did I want to.
But didn't it ever occur to him that you could sound like you? You didn't have to sound. There's already a Barbara Streisand. Do we need two of them? I mean, you know.
Oh my! Yeah, it's really quite a what we do to ourselves, and especially as you get older, you have to laugh. You have to, because you've got to take a look at your whole life and go, "Oh my Lord, how did that happen? How did I get here? Why did I do that?" And you can kill yourself with regrets, or you can celebrate that you're still here to even be able to fix it. And when I say fix it, you might not become a great singer, but you fix it by knowing what your parents, and even myself as a parent, what I could have done and could have said to make things better for my own children. I know that I tried to give them all of the freedom that I didn't have, because that was important to me. But sometimes I think I gave my daughter too much freedom, because she needed a little more structure. Her brother was born with structure. He just came out with structure. But my daughter, she just came out, you know, all over the place. And very different children. So I just think that we have to be kind to each other. We have to care about each other. We have to be concerned about each other. We can't just read things like we're reading on the news and think this is just happening somewhere, that it's not happening in my life, so it's not really happening. Yes, it is really happening, and it's really happening in your life and our lives and my life and everybody's life. It is really happening. And so my mother used to say, as long as there is one child that is being abused or one child that is hungry, there's no reason for us to be completely happy. And she was right. She was right. She didn't know. She wasn't a spiritual person. She wasn't even a religious person. But something in her told her that this just wasn't right. So all you have to be is really a good person to know that. Just be good, and just know that you are created from goodness. That's God. God is good, and that is goodness. And so when you know that you have it in you, it's already in you, that you were created to be good. You were created to have everything. You were created to feel love for your fellow man. That's what you were created for. And that is, when we finally leave this earth, I do believe that we never die. I believe, in fact, I don't even believe that the people that are here right now, we haven't known them lifetime from lifetime from lifetime. I believe that we all just keep coming back.
Well, you're talking to someone who takes people into other lifetimes. And yes, we do our therapy under the lifetimes. And that is exciting. And you just brought up something wonderful, because we do, I think we bring in a lot of the unresolved conflicts that we were dealing with in other lifetimes. And that's one of the situations that is almost completely ignored in education, in particularly in this country.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. So I don't even know how that's going to get fixed, because that's something that, as long as our country doesn't allow any type of spirituality or even basic religion to be taught in public schools, it's becoming more and more and more of a, I don't want to say atheist country, but certainly the children today aren't getting what we got. I think you probably were raised, at least I think you were. I know that for me, when I went to grade school, we started off the day reading from the Bible, and this was public school. We said the Pledge of Allegiance, and we read something from the Bible, and one day it would be the Old Testament, one day it would be the New Testament. And I don't remember anybody in school, in grade school, and I was raised in the South where there's a lot of prejudice, but I don't remember anything like that going to school. Everybody knew right from wrong. Everybody knew the Ten Commandments. Everybody knew how you were supposed to treat the other one. I don't know. I don't know what's going to happen with all of the lack of spiritual teachings, because there's so many children now that go to school whose parents, both parents work. They don't have time. They're rushing them in the morning. Here, grab something to eat. Nobody really sits down with each other anymore. Right. My family sat down every night for dinner together. We sat down every morning for breakfast. I was just raised that way. So there were a lot of things in my childhood that were good things. The problems that I encountered was I was an unusual child and I had unusual needs, and those needs weren't met because I didn't have anybody that really listened to me. They couldn't.
And
they,
you
they
probably
couldn't.
Didn't even have any way to ask.
Well, they saw it as too unusual. And for instance, I always heard voices as a child. I can't even remember not hearing voices. And I would, my father would say, you know, people might think that these imaginary friends that you have, they might think you're, you know, not all there. You can't talk about them. Well, it was pretty hard not to talk to them because they were talking to me. So yeah. I would talk to them, and sometimes I would talk out loud to them, and sometimes there was a whole group of them in the room. And so this has been like this my whole life. I've heard voices my whole life. And for a long time, I was able to give psychic readings, and I think about people who do this for a living, and I think, oh my God, because it can make you very sick. It made me very sick.
I know you didn't have anyone to help you how to renew yourself after, because you were giving way too much of yourself and not tuning in to the higher energy.
Well,
I learned
I'm not
that the hard
very
way.
Why that happened to me. I just would go out, and I could hear things, and I could see things, and something happened afterwards. I didn't remember a lot of what I said, but there was something that came over me afterwards that just was not good for me. So I force myself not to do it. And it's hard because when I'm with people, I can just automatically do it. And so it forces me, I have to force myself not to do that because it didn't feel good afterwards. It felt like I was actually taking a little bit of my life's force away. It was a very strange feeling. I'm not sure how people do this. And didn't that woman die that did it all the time? I can't think of her name. She was very popular.
Elaine Brown, maybe? Elaine Brown?
No. Brown? Sylvia. Her name
Sylvia
was Sylvia.
Brown. Okay. Sylvia, yeah. Okay. Mm. Yeah.
So I think you have to be
again,
a very...
I think that... that there is a way of tuning in to the higher energies that will prevent that. So it's something that I teach in my private sessions that is kind of amazing that most people don't teach it, and it's a puzzlement to me that it's so logical and so sensible that I wonder why everybody doesn't do it. But if you literally tune in to the creative force and the healing energy of the universe and just pull it through you and let that fuel you while you're in that particular mode of existence, you won't get tired. In fact, you'll be replenished.
And that would be wonderful because it was so frightening. After I did it for a couple of years, I thought, if I continue to do this, I surely will die. So it felt like that. It felt like it was actually taking my whole breath out of me.
Yeah.
And it's a very... So I don't do that anymore. And I do believe the law of attraction now has kind of... become my new way of helping people heal. Before, when I was giving psychic readings, I could bring in a person that had passed, and they knew it because I didn't know it before they sat down. So they knew that I knew how to do that, and I would bring them in and guide them through that person. Now, with Law of Attraction... Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. The reason I love it so much is that it isn't about you just changing your thoughts. It's about you changing your beliefs, which is much, much, much harder than changing your thoughts. We can always choose again. We can always choose to touch a hot plate because it's going to burn our hands. But it's different when you are changing your whole belief system. And that I'm still working on. That's why I say I'm a work in progress. I'm still working on changing my belief system.
And I wonder if the belief system is not enough. I believe you need to change, and not you, Victoria, but you, everybody, need to change your understanding of how things work.
Yeah. I think this just takes a lot of work, and I think that when people want this to happen overnight and they don't give it the time and respect that they need to redefine their thoughts and their beliefs and their habits, you have to allow love to heal you.
Yeah.
There isn't anything
else
that is more profound than love. And you have to love yourself in order to make this happen. So every time you get to a certain place, you stop. You know, even Oprah, she'll talk about it. Now, she's a perfect example of someone who goes back and forth with an eating disorder. But she has done so much good. She has done so much good in just redefining, helping us to redefine that love for ourselves. We have to love ourselves in mm-hmm. order to overcome any of this. So even the fear of death and dying, you have to love yourself and know who yourself really is, that yourself mm-hmm. really is your creator. Yourself really is God. It's not selfish to love yourself. It's selfless to love yourself. So
Victoria, I hate to do this, but I have to tell you we're running out of time. Can you please we could talk for about 3 weeks, I think, but I would love it if you would give the audience a way to get in touch with you, please.
They can go to victoriafeldman.com. And by doing that, they can read my latest blogs, they can order my books, they can also order my books on Amazon.com, and the name of the book is Hello Beautiful, How the Power of Self-Love Transforms and Heals You Forever. They can email me, victoria.feldman@gmail.com. So those are the ways that they can go on Facebook, and I have a timeline page, which is Victoria B as in Boy Feldman, and I also have a coaching page, which is just Victoria Feldman. I also have a Hello Beautiful resource page on Facebook where everybody who wants to send in anything about themselves, if they want to offer any kind of positive uplifting pick quotes or articles, they're free to do so. And that page is open to everybody that would like to join. So there's lots of different ways to get to me.
Fantastic. And you spell your name F as in Frank, E-L-D-M-A-N, right?
Correct. Correct.
Okay. And we usually end these sessions with a little guided imagery. Would you like to participate with me?
I would love it.
Okay. First, tense your body. Tense all over. Your whole body is a fist. Your belly button, your toes, your scalp, everything. And then when you feel yourself sort of trembling, collapse like a rag doll. This is the best, fastest way I know to just totally relax the body. And concentrate every bit of your awareness directly under your nose. And begin, as you breathe, just float on that breath. Float in. And as you exhale, let go of all the thoughts and feelings and energy that is between you and who you really are. Just blow it away. Take another deep breath and float in deeper and deeper through the layers of consciousness and down in and beyond to that wonderful place, that safe and beautiful, nurturing place inside where nothing can harm you, no doubts, no questions, just being, perfectly being. And absorb, just absorb, constantly blowing away any kind of negativity and pulling in the beautiful, positive, loving being that you truly are. Fill yourself with you, the greatest, most wonderful you can be. And hold on to that. Hold on to that. Take a deep, deep breath and stretch, 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 stretch. wiggle your fingers and toes, open your eyes, and as we always do, ending with love and light.